You're listening to the Kids Ministry Collective Podcast. Each episode of the KMC is designed to inform, encourage, and entertain those who love kids and serving kids ministry. We hope you'll enjoy today's podcast and maybe even learn a thing or two. Now let's join our team for this episode of the KMC.
And thanks for joining me on this episode of the KMC Podcast. I like doing these episodes because we get to feature different resources and books and things that our Kid Ministry Collective community would care about and need. And I had the privilege of being on a launch team for this book. So full disclosure, I did get a free copy of the book. I would have bought one and I probably will buy more. So I'm going to say that right off the top. But it's called The Red Book, The Lifeblood of Children's Ministry, and it's by Mark Harper. And Mark and I met a number of years ago back at CPC and had a good time talking. And I've gotten to know this man's heart for ministry, for the kingdom, and I so appreciate it very, very much. So it's an honor to be a part of this. And we wanted to do this episode so that more people could hear about this book, so that you could read it, consider it, let God work in your heart like he's been working in mine as I've been reading it, and we'll continue to reread it. So Mark, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Tom. It's an honor to be here. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what the Red Book is all about. Give us an overview. What do you mean by the lifeblood of children's ministry?
The Red Book is essentially a book about what's most important. What are the vital things as they relate to kids ministry? I've been directly and indirectly involved in kids ministry since 1978, whatever that is. That's a long time. I guess almost 4 years now. And so I've seen a lot of things come and go during that time, you know, and the culture changes and all of that kind of stuff. But there are things that, you know, the important things don't change. And what really matters doesn't change. I've also seen a lot of, I don't know if stress is the right word, connected to people that are involved in kids ministry. But when I look at some of the things that are being talked about in social media and all that kind of stuff, I find that people are not talking about the things that are really, really important. It's not that they're never talking about it, but the majority of what you see is it's the surface stuff, if you will. And I don't remember exactly when, but it just, the Lord put in my heart to write this book, and it's designed to be, you know, to build a foundation for any children's ministry. Whether you're just starting out, it's a great foundation, or if you've been in it for decades, just a reminder to what we do and why we do it and how important it is what we're doing. Kids ministry is something that's really, really important to the Lord.
That's right. So tell me, what's your goal? What's your hope for this book? You kind of already started to go into that. That's why I thought I might as well ask.
Right.
When God put this on your heart, what was your, you know, what did you sense that he wanted you to accomplish in this book?
Well, our goal, bottom line, is to help churches, to help kids pastors, to help kids ministries. I'm hoping that, you know, I can see young kids pastors using this book to build the foundation for their ministry, and then people that have been doing it for years. I can see even parents, you know, parents that really want their kids to know the Lord in a genuine way. This would be a great parenting book. Bottom line is I hope that it just reminds people and brings them back to what's most important in what we're doing.
Yeah. And I think you're pretty credible. When it comes to speaking to us. Share a little bit about your background before I get into the book exactly. I want people to understand, you know, you've been a children's pastor, you've been a lead pastor, you've got Super Church. You've done a lot of different things. So tell us a little bit about your background too, because I want people to get to know who Mark Harper is.
Well, I found the Lord in 1976. I grew up in Birmingham, Michigan, which is a suburb of Detroit.
Go Blue.
Yeah, I'm a Michigan fan. Just don't tell Spencer about it. But anyway, the oh, you a Blue fan too?
Oh, yes.
And so
we just lost part of our crowd right there, but no, that's okay.
Exactly. Hopefully they'll walk in forgiveness and
yes.
But so my senior in high school, I got saved and you know, called to the ministry. During that time, I had plans to go to Michigan State University, actually, and Lord changed all that. And at Bible school, I had a class on kids ministry. I went to Bible school in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and there was a guy there named Willie George, which, you know, some people probably know, some may not. Anybody that's involved in kids ministry today, whether they realize it or not, is indebted to Willie George in many ways. But he's pastor of one of the largest churches in the country now. But at that time, he was kids pastor at a church in Oklahoma, and he taught a class on ministering to kids, and it just got my attention. The revelation came to me that you could preach to kids, that you could minister to kids the Word of God, and that they could understand it. And I gained an understanding of that this was something really close to the Lord's heart. And all that came through Willie. And so I got involved with him at his church to start out with in a preschool class. I taught in a preschool class at 11, and then in at the 9 o'clock service, instead of going to big church, I went and watched Willie in kids church for about a year, and just watched him and learned from him. And that's how I got started. And went back to Michigan, helped my youth pastor. We planted 3 different churches in 4 years, one in Canada, one in Port Huron, and one in Royal Oak, Michigan. And so I was instrumental in starting kids ministry in 3 different church plants. Ended up at a church in Minneapolis that grew to about 10,000 people. In the meantime there, wrote something called the Super Church curriculum. We've revised that. First came out in 1988. We just, in the past couple of years, redid it. We call it Super Church 2.0, and took out, you know, some of the things that dated it, the puppet skits and things, and added videos and you know, brought it into the 21st century. But over 5,000 churches have used our curriculum, mostly independent churches and all over the world. So that's you know, exciting to be a part of that and helping other churches.
That is awesome. So for our listeners, obviously you've got that experience and you've got that heartbeat. And so I think let's dive into the book a little bit. I want to give people some highlights. There's so much we could, unfortunately, don't have enough time to talk about, because every chapter as I read this book, I'm like, ooh, there's a good thing. So I had to narrow it down. So this wasn't easy for me to narrow down, but I wanted to give some highlights of what I thought most people would catch on to. And I thought, let's obviously start right at the beginning. You challenge leaders right off the bat to consider the end in mind, and the idea of the gospel and teaching children to pray. You name off those 3 things: have that end in mind, understand the gospel, and teaching kids to pray. Why are those 3 things so important to you?
Well, the end in mind is kind of the question that I like to ask people, to really get them to think about, because I find that most people that are teaching kids are kind of going week to week, you know, and I know I was for the first couple of years. I was just, I'd get through Sunday and I'd wake up Monday morning and I'd say, oh no, Wednesday's coming, you know, you know what I'm saying? You kind of get in that grind and you're just kind of, you know, yeah, you're having fun and there's good services and kids are learning, but you're not really thinking about, you know, the end. What does the end look like? And so the question to define the end is, what does a spiritually mature fifth grader look like? What do we want the kids that graduate, when they graduate to youth ministry, what do we want their skills to be? And what's funny is, you know, I was doing some consulting at a church in Florida the other day, and I just asked, so that I'll do a workshop like this. I'll say, okay, what does a spiritually mature fifth grader look like? And I'll just write things on the, you know, the whiteboard and talk about that and have a dialogue with them. And pretty much everything that they were saying to me in this was, well, they're kind, they're patient, they obey their parents. Everything they were saying had to do with behavior.
Right. Outward appearance.
Yeah. And, well, behavior is important, but yeah. Mm-hmm. I stopped and I said, okay, everything you're talking about talks about how they relate to one another, but what does their relationship with Christ look like? And it was like almost silence, like nobody said anything, like we need to define that. That's the primary thing they're doing. Yes, we're teaching kids about, you know, being kind and all that, but that should flow out of their relationship with Christ. And it's easy to, you can, you know, through behavior modification, teach kids good behavior. But of course, good behavior without Christ, you still go to hell, you know?
Right.
So, you know, just kind of like what's most important and, what does a relationship with Christ look like? And that kind of begins. So I ended up with 11 things and I have a chapter on each one of those things, but it starts out with just basic things that they have a devotional life, that they're just the idea that kids are actually reading the Bible. I don't mean watching videos about the Bible or sitting in Sunday school classes. And here's kind of the tricky thing. A lot of kids know the Bible stories because they sit in Sunday school classes, they watch the videos. But it's amazing how many never have cracked open a Bible for themselves.
Right.
And so having a devotional life, a time of prayer, doesn't have to be long, but teaching kids about prayer, how to pray, not just telling them to pray, but, you know, and then, of course, going to church. So God speaks to us through prayer, through Bible study, through church. And then the bottom line is, do we obey? Do we do what he says? You know? Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, it's simplistic, but at the same time, it, you know, those are the kids that stay with the Lord through their teen years, the kids that have a devotional life, the kids that have regular church attendance, the kids that are in tune to the voice of the Holy Spirit, and they're listening and they're obeying. So that's why we start there.
Right. So once you get that end picture in mind of what do you want, and I think that it's wise for, and I think you'd say this, it'd be good for any children's minister worker to answer those questions. What does a mature fifth grader look like? I mean, most of us, they transition out of children's ministry into youth ministry at the sixth grade level. And so what do we want them to know? What do we want them to be thinking about and doing? I found that list to be a really solid list. You know, you talk about, you know, about friends and worship and love, how to share their own faith. I think that's something we don't spend enough time on. I think you'd probably agree.
Yeah.
Teaching kids the gospel so that they can share the gospel themselves. You know, I wonder how many times, you know, if we're making disciples, I think that's part of our great commission and great commandment is to help people, you know.
Yeah. And the reason why these things are important is you got to know where you're headed, and then you build your programs around that, you know.
Right.
People tend to build programs. What most people do, they go look at another church and see what another church is doing, and then they, and especially the successful mega churches, mm-hmm. Copy them. But we need to really look at not just how exciting or how good the videos are or whatever, but are the kids learning the things that we want them to learn? And if these things, whatever's on your list, if it's not in your program, if there's not some part of your program that addresses those things, they're not going to happen. And so, you know, just asking the question, when kids graduate from fifth grade, how many of them could lead another child to Christ?
Mm-hmm.
And is that even important? And I think in most of our churches, the majority can't. you know? And so that's not just going to happen because they're sitting in Sunday school. There needs to be training and a program. And how do you actually do this? So anyway, that's why those things are important.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're definitely important. And so we've got to have that intentionality. I'm going to jump into this quote, cause I really liked it. You said, if I could do my parenting all over again, I'd spend less time teaching my kids to obey me and more time teaching them to hear the voice of the Holy Spirit. The bottom line is, it's good for kids to obey their parents, but it's better for them to obey the voice of the Holy Spirit. Their parents aren't always going to be with them, but the Holy Spirit is always there. Why don't you explain a little bit of why you came to that conclusion? Why that I could feel your conviction right as I read that.
Yeah. Well, of course, I'm not only a kids pastor, but I'm a grandpa now, you know, and I've raised kids to adulthood and now have grandkids, and grandkids are great. If I knew they were going to be so good, I would just skip the kids and gone straight to the grandkids. there's things you learn, and sometimes doing the wrong way. And for years, as a parent, I was convinced that my kids were good kids and that they were strong Christians, if you will, mm-hmm. because they obeyed me. You know, the Bible says, children, obey your parents in the Lord. But of course, yes, the Lord wants your kids to obey you, but that's just first base. You know, there's going to come a time where, you know, therefore a man leaves his father and mother, cleaves to his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. The plan is that your kids leave. And here's what I see happening. This is what I see happening in a lot in churches is parents are actually, they don't mean to do this, but many times parents teach their kids to be dependent on their relationship with God instead of teaching kids to have their own relationship mm-hmm. with God. Instead of teaching kids to pray and listen to the Holy Spirit and obey the Holy Spirit, we kind of do all their praying for them and then tell them what God said. And there certainly is a time, you know, when they're five, yeah, you do that. But somewhere before their teen years, you need to begin as a parent to release certain things and let them make choices. But you don't just let them make choices without teaching them how to hear the voice of the Holy Spirit. So when I'm getting up and teaching kids, I'll have an object lesson where I have a big plate with garbage on it. So I actually, you know, just really stinky stuff like banana peels and tin cans and just things that's obvious that it's garbage and yuck, you know. and so I'll start out saying, hey, if I invited you over to my house today, if I invited you over to Pastor Mark's house today and you came over, you're real excited and we sat down for dinner, I set a big plate of garbage in front of you. You know, would you have to call your parents and say, Mom and Dad, Pastor Mark wants me to eat garbage. Should I do it? And it's like, well, no, I know not. I don't have to call my parents to know not to eat garbage. I know not to eat garbage. But yet when it comes to, you know, what I like to call spiritual garbage. So it's amazing. So I say this, I can tell when a child is depending, so he's moved from, so early childhood, yeah, they are dependent on mom and dad's relationship with God in a big way. During the grade school years, before they get to their teen years, we want them to transition from depending on mom and dad's relationship to depending on their own.
Right.
Because their most challenging years in life are going to be those teen years.
Right.
As far as their faith goes, that's when doubt's going to begin to enter in. So we want them to go into the teen years with a strong relationship with Christ, which basically means they listen to Christ and they do what he says. And so if you're over at a friend's house and a friend puts on a movie that you know you shouldn't watch, and your friend says, hey, I want to watch this movie, how do you respond? You know, of course, there's three responses. You can go ahead and do it anyway. A lot of kids would say, well, my mom and dad won't let me watch that movie. Mm-hmm. Now, we think that's a good answer because they're obeying their parents, and in a certain sense it is. But there's also an underlying thing when a child says, my mom and dad won't let me do that. It tells me that it's not that they don't want to do it, it's that mom and dad won't let me do that. So how do we go with a child from mom and dad won't let me do that to I don't want to watch that movie because it's good for me? When a child says that, they've transitioned into that. I have my own relationship with God, and because that's good for me. I hear his voice. I know when something, when I got a red light on the inside and, you know, I shouldn't do something. So that's what I'm talking about there. Yeah. is teaching kids to begin to have their own relationship with God and not just depend on their parents' relationship.
Yeah. Is there one thing that you've seen, maybe I'm not going to phrase this question the right way, but I know a lot of leaders struggle with how do we help parents see this need. Is there some advice you'd give, to somebody who says, well, I'd love to do that. I'd love to engage my parents that way to get them to do that for their children, but I'm not sure how I would go about it. What would you tell them?
Well, the first and best thing would be to teach on it in the pulpit, mm-hmm. on Sunday morning. And I realize in a lot of churches, that's not possible. And, I know early on at the church I was at when we were about 1,000 people, maybe once or twice a year, I would get the pulpit, and I loved that. At a certain point, the church ended up having about 30 pastors, and I didn't get it very often maybe once every 5 years. So, it may or may not be a realistic thing, but if you can ask your pastor for an opportunity to teach on these things, that's the best way. Mm-hmm. It's just that, it's not that parents are bad parents. It's just that, they're just trying to get their kids to obey them. Saying?
And they don't know what they don't know. Sometimes don't understand, especially if they're new believers, they don't understand that spiritual. They don't understand what Deuteronomy 6 says.
But the second best way to teach parents is to get them involved in the kids' ministry. Because if you get them involved in the kids' ministry, then you have an opportunity to mentor them. Then you have an opportunity to teach them how to teach kids. And, one thing I always ask my volunteers is, why do you do this? What are you getting out of it? A couple times a year I'd ask that question just to remind them that something's coming back to them. And the most common thing when I would ask that question, what are you getting out of this and why do you keep doing it? You've been doing this for 5 years. Why do you keep doing this? The most common thing I'd hear was, this makes me a better parent. And we started having parents taking the curriculum home and teaching their kids at home. They were asking to take it. We weren't pushing it in their hands, Mm-hmm. Now, we did have handouts for the parents and all that, but they wanted more than that. And they, when they began to see what kids could learn, when they began to see kids learning these things, they caught that revelation that, wow, kids really can learn to hear the voice of God. It's not this deep thing that's impossible to teach kids. Mm-hmm. So that's really it. Parents need to see it. They need to see it in action. They need to see kids being taught about this stuff and see their kids get it. And it's like a light bulb turns on. And that can happen by doing it in the pulpit. If you don't have that, any way that you can get. Another little kind of thing that we used to do was what we called Parent Weekend. Mm-hmm. And we would do that every October. It would be like the first Sunday in October, parents of first graders would come into kids' church and just watch. And the second weekend, parents of second graders did, and so on. And so, 5 weeks in a row, we did that. And part of that deal was to try to recruit them to help. But even if they didn't help, just seeing what was going on in there was really, really helpful to them.
Yeah.
So that would be, if there any way you can get the parents to see what you're doing, the light bulb turns on.
Sure. Sure. I like that. Let's dive into another subject. You devote several chapters to leaders and building leaders. And obviously anybody who serves in kid ministry knows that that's one of their greatest needs is developing leadership, not just recruiting volunteers, but finding leaders and training them. And some people struggle with, what do I say to my leaders? You know, and then some people struggle, especially those that are in smaller churches. They feel that struggle because I don't have a lot of volunteers to begin with. How am I supposed to find leaders out of those volunteers? I barely have volunteers.
Right.
So in chapter 20, you spend some time talking through about building that team. Can you speak a little bit, give us some highlights, you talk about, you know, building the team and investing in your leaders and leading them and some qualities, that leaders need to have. I thought they were all really good, without giving too much away, cause I want them to get the book. But you give some steps for building your leadership team. Kind of highlight those for us.
So you want me just to address what's in the book?
Yeah. You can do a little bit and then, you know, share your heart on building leaders.
All righty. So, well, as far as, you know, sometimes it's just the simplest things are incredibly powerful. So the way you build a team is the same way that Jesus did. Before he really started doing a lot of ministry and teaching, the first thing he did is he gathered his team. And the way that he, of course, you know, he's Jesus. He's the Son of God. So, you know, he's got something on everybody else. I get that. But the reality is he got leaders by asking them. He identified people that had leadership qualities. I believe that it was strategic who he asked. And just simply said, follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. So what I learned from that is that, I'm going to have to ask people to help me. And I honestly think that's the hardest part. We don't like to ask people to do things. And sometimes people think, well, they're too busy or they've got three kids at home or whatever. You know, we answer people with a no before we even ask.
I was going to say, we start making excuses for them before. Yeah, I get that.
There's two things that you can do there's two things that work, in my opinion, as far as recruiting goes. One is asking people, just simply asking people one-on-one, or, and I'd already alluded to this, if you can share vision from the pulpit, you know, then you're that's still an ask, but it's multiplied because it's you know, hundreds or thousands of people depending on how big your church is, but it does boil down to asking people, and so as far as things that you're looking for, you know, one is staff to your weakness. So, mm-hmm. You know, for me, I can't carry a tune, I can't sing, I knew. Everywhere I've been, I'm looking for somebody that can lead worship because I can't. And that's sort of a no-brainer. But another thing is I'm not good at details. I'm more of a visionary, kind of a D personality. I needed to have a lot of people around me that were good at details. And so one way that you would get them is by just complimenting them on their gift. You know? Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, that's amazing what you do. You have the gift of organization or whatever, you know what I'm saying? And it's a lot of times you can just connect with people that way. But staff to your weakness, know what your needs are. You know, I know Jim Weidman in his leadership book, but, you know, write down what leaders are you looking for before you start, you know, asking people to do things. You know, you want people that are going to not just follow you, but if you're looking for leaders, you want people that are going to be open to sharing their opinions. So that means you've got to have some meetings. I call them brainstorming meetings, where you're sitting down with people and you're not telling people what to do. If the only thing that's happening in your meetings is you're telling people what to do, you're just going to attract followers. So sometimes you do have to have meetings like that where you're talking about this is going on and this is, you know, I need so-and-so to do this or whatever. And, but you need to have some meetings where you're asking for input. And so sometimes the leaders are the people that have opinions that are different than yours, and you can't push those people away. You know, the leaders in your class, if you think about the kids that are leaders, they're the kid, the kid that wants to take over the class, you know? And so sometimes I always say this, sometimes what we interpret as rebellion is really just leadership. Not always, but sometimes it is. And so, you know, just being comfortable with somebody else. I see a lot of kids pastors, they're not comfortable with sharing the attention. You know, they want to have, they want to be the person that all the kids love, you know, and you know, it's, they're not really comfortable with sharing the attention with somebody else. And if you have multiple leaders, then you got to be willing to do that. Some of the places that I found leaders, my first leader, when I first started, so I'm in Michigan planting a church. We've got 10 kids. Maybe we got 50, 60 people in our church. My first leader that helped me was the youth pastor. And what this is what I did. I was by myself. I didn't have any help. So I went up to the youth pastor and I said, if you help me in kids church, I'll help you in youth on Wednesday nights. That was my, that's how I got my first leader. You know what I'm saying? Is I knew that I needed somebody. And there's truth there too. It's interesting that when Jesus called his 12 disciples, he didn't call any unemployed people. Ooh, everybody that Jesus
Say that again. Say that again.
When Jesus called his 12 disciples, he didn't call unemployed people.
That's good.
And that's another thing that we do. Sometimes we'll look at somebody, we'll think they're busy. You know, well, you want busy people. You want people that are doing things and know how to do things. Some people are too busy. I get that. That's not what I'm talking about. But, you know, I knew the youth pastor. He was a good friend, and I knew he was someone I could count on, and that he could count on me. So we just agreed to help each other. And he was my first recruit. The other thing I started doing in a young church was I started using the teenagers and the kids as leaders. I started tapping into their, I discovered that early that they had a lot of influence. And so, and I don't mean I just grabbed them on Sunday morning and said, you would do this. We would have rehearsals. We would practice drama skits and puppet skits. And eventually we had a worship team that was kids and teenagers. But I started doing that early on because especially middle school kids, teenagers that don't have driver's license yet are available to help. And I think it's sad. Some churches won't let teenagers serve in the kids ministry. And I just, you know, you're missing something there. Here's another place, good parents. If you have good kids, kids that are good kids don't get that way by accident. Their parents are good leaders. And so, especially if it's a new family that has, the head usher hasn't got to them yet, you know, somebody comes in and they're good kids. You know, I had this line that I would say, if I wanted them, I'd say, you know, I've noticed your kids are really good and you're the kind of person we want teaching other people's kids. So that's another way that I identified leaders.
That's worth its weight in gold right there.
Yeah. Another thing that, you know, is if you're going to find people that aren't involved in kids ministry, you need to go to places where there's people that aren't involved in kids ministry. And what I mean by that is if you're spending all your time in kids church, it's kind of hard to recruit some new leaders. You've got to get involved in other areas of the church. And I know it's hard to hear that because most people that serve in kids are already, you know, they're already busy anyway.
Right.
I started hanging out in the men's ministries and my wife started hanging out in the ladies' ministries. And that was an effective recruiting ground for us. We would go to other activities specifically. We had an agenda specifically to recruit people for the kids' ministry. And so that's, I think that's, you know, a lot of kids' pastors don't think about that. They think that I don't have any leaders and they're just kind of waiting for the leaders to show up. And that's not going to happen.
Kind of like they're waiting for the manna from heaven. They just expect it to drop and, yeah, I'm going to get all these volunteers or I'm going to get these leaders. I like how you said that, though. I'm going to back up for a second. You said make that list of what you need, and then you were intentional about who you went after. You know, you almost, you know, start asking yourself, who in my church has these giftings? And sometimes you have to ask other people, who do you know that fits this bill? And so you really went with laser-like focus then into these groups, like you said, on a mission. I think that's a transferable truth that it doesn't matter what size church you serve in. Wouldn't you say? I mean, it doesn't matter if you're in a church of 100 or 1,000 or 5,000, you've got to do it that same way.
Yeah. Well, if you don't know what they're going to do, don't recruit them.
Right.
You know, like the worst thing you can do with a leader is, hey, will you help me? And then they show up and what do you want me to do? And you're not sure.
Right.
You strategically, you got to know where your needs are and go after those people.
Excellent. In fact, that's a good, I think, a good segue into the next part. You talk about five essential leadership skills, and why these things are important. So let's kind of talk about some of these five skills that you think are important for kids ministry. You start off with be an example. What do you mean by be an example?
The very first thing that Peter said, you know, when Peter was talking to pastors, he told them to feed the flock of God, and then he said, be an example. You do hear a lot of kids pastors that are kind of down on their volunteers, and you have to be what you want people to be. And there's sometimes like there's times that I'm modeling stuff that somebody else could do, but the reason I'm doing it still, if you will. We just had a big kids event and we're having to tear down the tables and kind of clean up the room afterwards. And I'm asking other people to do that. Even though there's other people I've asked to do that, I'm going to model serving by getting involved in that. And so people are going to do what you do. So it really everybody's watching you. The kids are watching you. The volunteers are watching you. Parents are watching you. That comes with the territory. So leadership begins with, you know, not being a hypocrite and, you know, being the person that you want other people to be and setting the example and different things. Sometimes it's simple things, you know, like John Maxwell talks about leadership parking. You know, before John Maxwell, all the pastors could have reserved parking spaces up by the front kind of thing. And he talks about leadership parking is, you know, at the back of the parking lot kind of deal. And I think it was at his church at Skyline where they didn't have enough parking. And some of the people, they had buses going and things like that. So the leadership parking lot was, you know, the furthest lot away, if you will. The Lord does ask more of leaders, and we need to be an example in our character. Kids are watching us. Kids are incredibly influential, and not just at church. You know, it's what we're doing in our lifestyle and in every part of it. We need to be an example.
Yeah, I've always tried to say, you know, if I want my leaders to do something, I need to be modeling it first, right? Yeah. I mean, if I want them to leave their room clean, I need to keep my area clean, and I need to, you know, which I'm not known for being tidy all the time, but
yeah,
that's an area I got to work on. But, you know, I mean, yeah, I can see that. So the second one you have is be proactive. What do you mean by being proactive for a leader?
Well, this is a tendency that I had early on, and I see it in others, but I think a lot of times when you're not the top dog, you can start to see yourself as a reactive leader. And so, in other words, what you're doing is dependent on somebody else. And so you're a reactive leader. You're reacting to their vision versus being proactive. And a lot of times in kids ministry, there's no doubt that people in kids ministry feel dumped on, especially when other activities get added and it's assumed that there's going to be kids ministry and
right.
You know, special meetings and all that kind of stuff. And it's just, there's not, especially when you add nursery and all that, which needs so many volunteers, you have this feeling of, kind of being a victim, if you will. And so, it's important that you not latch on to that, that you become proactive. And sometimes that means dealing with your attitude. One example that I gave in the book was, I remember during staff meeting one day, my pastor was talking about having a New Year's Eve service where they prayed in the new year. And so the service was going to start at 7 and go to midnight. And of course, I'm kind of sweating it over there and hoping he doesn't ask to have kids in it. I'm not really looking forward to a 5-hour kids ministry service. But of course, he did ask for kids ministry. And so I wasn't in a good attitude when I left that, meeting and kind of feeling sorry for myself. But then I started thinking about, okay, what can I do here? How can I go for 5 hours? And I decided to do a lock-in with the kids. And so we did like an overnight lock-in, and we charged money for it because what we did is around, I think at 11 o'clock at night, we loaded everybody up on a bus and went to Chuck E. Cheese restaurant after they were closed. So we were at Chuck E. Cheese from 11 to 2 in the morning, kids playing video games, eating pizza, all that kind of stuff. 2 a.m. we came back, rolled out the sleeping bags, everybody went to sleep, but it was, it was a huge hit, the lock-in. I mean, it was just, the kids had a lot of fun. It was a big thing. So I took something that I was feeling was a negative and I turned it into a win. It's critical that, if we're going to be leaders, not only just with the kids, but with, how the rest of the staff views us and how our pastors view us, that we be proactive leaders.
Oh, that's great. You have a quote that says, I'm going to quote the book, "A proactive person doesn't focus on the things he can't control. Don't waste time getting angry about things you can't control." That is good truth. Another one of your five is vision casting and goal setting. I think like you, I'm a dreamer. I like thinking about the vision and that kind of thing. But oftentimes when you're sitting in children's ministry, you're getting your vision more or less from the leadership. And so this can be tough when sometimes you're seeing something and wondering how come the senior leaders don't see that. Or you may be serving under, well, I'll get in. I've got another backup question because there's an opposite thing. Let's start with this one. What do you do, when it starts off with vision, for a leader to start, where should they check themselves? Where should they start from when they consider leadership and vision and goal setting?
One thing I like to say is, what you want to do is find the intersection between your passion and your pastor's vision. It's understanding what his heart is, what makes your pastor tick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the starting place. Another thing is looking at, if I'm doing what my pastor's doing, then he's already, if I look at what he's doing and I would always do this, every church I was at, I looked at what my pastor was doing. I looked at what was going on in big church and I tried to emulate that in kids church. So I'm thinking, you know, that, you know, when I was at Living Word in Minneapolis, when I came there, my pastor was really good at leadership, teaching on leadership. He had a lot of leaders around him. The way he organized the church was with these, he called them ministry heads, is what he called them. So like his head usher was a ministry head. The head of evangelism was a ministry head. And at that time, the church was kind of, yes, there was staff, but it was just a handful of staff. Maybe there was 10 of us. And it was a church of, it was over 1,000, I forget. But there was a lot of key volunteers that were in leadership roles. And so he had all these ministries with leaders over them. And I just kind of, you know, he really trusted these volunteers with leadership. He was the first pastor I saw that actually did that. And I saw how he trusted them, and I saw how they stepped up for him. And I was praying, and I this was me. I got a vision that I believe was from the Lord, where I saw the same thing happening at Kids Church. And so I think at that time we had a puppet team, but that was the only thing that we had that kids could do. But I saw, you know, why not have kid ushers, and why not have a kids evangelism team and have kids that are doing sound and kids that are leading worship? And so I looked at the ministries that were happening in big church, and I emulated those, and just kind of mimicked what he was doing. And so that was something that I got a vision for that wasn't happening in the kids church, but it was in line with how he did things. And so you got to find that, yeah, you are, you don't want to be doing things that your pastor's not in favor of. But I guess for me, I'm passionate about so many things that I don't want to spend my time doing something that my pastor doesn't want, because there's other things I'm passionate about I could be doing. And so it's finding that intersection. And then just kind of vision is just simply a desired future.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of always have to do that. What's the vision? You know, looking at the situation, what do I see for the future? Because if you're not doing that, you're just kind of maintaining. And that's, leaders don't do that. Leaders don't just maintain. They future before other people see it. But you can do it in kids ministry. You know, if a lot of times you'll hear kids pastors say that. I'll be honest with you, the pastor that I served was a strong leader, but I wouldn't exactly say he had a vision for kids ministry, because he knew the church needed it to grow, but his vision was growth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he didn't really think about the kids, you know.
Yeah.
He trusted me to do that. And so it's, you know, it's getting a vision for the area that's been delegated to you.
Because that's what I was going to ask, is what if you're serving in a place where you have a leader that's not a visionary? They're not a goal setter, really, and they just say, go make it a great children's ministry, and that's the scope that you get. I actually believe it, I even had a pastor one time tell me, just make it a wow experience.
Yeah.
That was his vision. When I said, pastor, tell me your vision for the children's ministry.
Yeah.
That was his answer to me, was, Tom, go make a wow experience.
Well, I would do that then. You know, like, I'm not looking for my pastor to mentor me in kids ministry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got to look to other people to do that, because if he had a vision for kids ministry, that's what he'd be doing.
Right.
And so I don't think that's unusual. In fact, I think most pastors, where kids are concerned, are kind of that way. They want it to be good. They want kids to learn. They want parents. They want to get good testimonies from the parents, but they're not really thinking about the detail. They're thinking about other areas.
Yes.
And so whatever freedom he gave me, I would run with it. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, the only thing you got to be careful about is that you get tunnel vision, where you're not communicating with other areas in the church. You could run too far with it, where that's all you see. And that's not good. But, you know, I wouldn't let it throw me. Sometimes I find that pastors' wives, we used to always say this at Mark Harper Ministries, which is the, you know, where we sell the Super Church 2.0 curriculum, but we'd always say the pastor's wife is our best friend, because they a lot of times have the vision for the kids where the pastor doesn't, but they have a lot of influence with the decision maker. And so it, you know, sometimes it's finding that person, and many times it is the pastor's wife that has the vision for the kids, but also has influence with the pastor. And sometimes it works that way.
Yeah.
I don't think the Lord, every church is different, and I'm not sure that the Lord really cares like how it gets done. He just wants kids to know him and come to Christ. And so that's whatever good. It takes.
That's good. Because I know the first time I heard that, it threw me for a loop, but then I came to that realization, and I'm glad you said that, and I hope people hear that, you know, and it goes back to what you said earlier, get to know your pastor, get to know his heart for the whole church, and then take that vision that he has and narrow it down for the kids ministry and run with it. And I think it's better than being micromanaged. So I've learned to appreciate when a pastor tells me that.
I would much rather have that than the micromanager.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got two more in your top five. The next one is called, delegate. And I know that some in real small churches are going to read that and go, to who? So what do you mean by delegate? And what's your advice again? You know, how do you help somebody get past that mental barrier of, but I don't have anybody to delegate to? Which is part of that Lone Ranger syndrome, which you have another chapter on that.
Yeah. It really does involve getting past, you know, for me, initially, it was getting past the fear of rejection, you know. So early on, I very much was about, if I want it done right, I got to do it myself. I didn't like hearing the word no. And so I didn't ask, early on. And the reality is that we need a team. So the delegation thing does start with asking people to help. We kind of already hit on this, but not making decisions for them. Like, don't look at somebody, I'm thinking right now, we stepped out a couple years ago to plant a brand new church. We've got about 50 people coming out, and it's, the lead pastor. But I'm thinking right now about all of my key leaders have, I'm thinking about, one of my key leaders, they have three preschool kids at home. They have three kids under the age of four.
Wow.
And if I thought a lot about it, I wouldn't ask them to do anything. You know what I'm saying? But right. that couple, there's two couples that do more than anybody else in our church. And the other couple has two kids under the age of two. And you know what I'm saying? And they're doing more than the single people. I don't mean it the wrong way. I'm just saying you can't make decisions for people. You gotta ask them.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta view delegation as, I say it like this: delegation is not dumping. Dumping is, hey, will you do this, Tom? And you say, yeah, and then we never talk again.
Okay.
Delegation is actually a method of discipleship.
Oh, that's so interesting. I like that perspective.
Well, it keeps you connected to people, one thing my pastor used to say is people that get involved in church stay in church. And so if I look at delegation as just simply getting through my to-do list, there's truth there, but it also can be a way of, you know, helping other people grow by giving them something new to do. And the reason that's important is it kind of changes your attitude on it. All of a sudden, I don't have this guilty feeling for asking somebody to do something. I'm actually helping them grow as a leader. And it, you know, it changes my my perspective. But it, you know, it starts with finding that one person. Like I did that day, I looked around at this church in Port Huron, Michigan, where we had 50 people, and I was by myself. And the key people that I had was the youth pastor. I asked him to help me. And then there was a 12-year-old kid that was in the class, and he was my other helper. And so I had the youth pastor and I had this 12-year-old kid. And I started delegating things to them. So delegation starts with finding one person that will help you, you know, yeah. And then, you know, giving them things to do. And if they do it, then that's probably something that they like doing. And it really just, you know, it starts out that simple. But it's, if you're going to grow as a leader, you know, the rule, my pastor used to say this, the rule for delegation is if you can delegate it, you delegate it. You know, what you start out, you write out your to-do list in the morning or at the beginning of the week, whenever you do it, write out your to-do list. And then the next thing you do, go through your to-do list and ask the question, what on my list can I delegate to somebody else? Mm-hmm. Is there somebody that I can talk into helping me do this?
Or they could probably do better.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then it does involve making that phone call, and that's what trips most people up. It's just the simple fear of making the phone call.
Mm-hmm. All right, your last tip is on communication. So give us a quick tip of how to improve communication.
Well, I think the biggest thing about communication is that communication is a two-way street. And a lot of leaders don't get that. So what I mean by that is different things. For example, if I have a leadership meeting, and I kind of already hit on this, but if there's no opportunity for me to listen to my leaders, then I'm not really communicating. So if I go into my meeting and I say, okay, this is the vision, these are the things they're doing, I need you to do this and you to do this and do this, and there's no opportunity for me to listen to them, that's not communication. That may be telling people what to do, and that may work depending on how charismatic you are or whatever. But you're not really leading as strong as you can if you're not listening to people. Another thing that I see happen a lot with kids pastors is they will like fire off a mass email to everybody and then assume that people got it. So, you know, it's just kind of, they fire off this mass email and then there's no communication back. And so I told you about this. I sent you that email. Again, what didn't happen? Communication doesn't happen just because you fire off a mass email. if there's not back and forth, you're not communicating. Don't assume that people know what you want. Over communicate, overdo it. You're the staff person. You're thinking about this every day. They're not. Just because you told them last week doesn't mean they remember it this week, things like that. And I think probably the biggest thing is, another thing I would do is I would always have it was usually just a handwritten schedule of what was going on that day. I liked writing it out by hand. This is the schedule for kids church. Here's worship. Here's the object lesson, drama skit, video, puppet skit, so on. I have my schedule and I'd have that handwritten out who was doing what. And I would hand out that schedule to everybody. We'd have a little 10-minute huddle. And of course, if they were doing the object lesson, they got the object lesson ahead of time. They're not just, reading it on Sunday morning, hopefully.
Right.
But here's the schedule. And then, so John, you're doing the object lesson. So when you see the puppets get going on, that's you're right after them. So just go up there, you know, get ready, you know, have the microphone in hand while the puppets gets going on, so we don't have any dead time kind of thing. And, you know, it's just amazing how something simple as putting a schedule in everybody's hand at the beginning of the service just helps make everything go smoother. And the other thing I see happen a lot, here's a question I get a lot. I do a lot of consulting and coaching at churches, and everywhere I go, I'll ask this question: do you have a lot of no-shows with your volunteers, or do you have trouble with people being on time? And you hear most people say yes. It's very rare I don't hear yes. And I'll respond by saying, I can tell you how to cure 90% of your no-shows and 90% of your late people. And here's how you do it. You do it by communicating, by making a phone call. So everybody that's on the schedule this Sunday, call them. Call them up on the phone. And you're not calling and saying, hey, remember, you're on the schedule. That's not what you're doing. You're just calling them and saying, hey, this is what we got going on. I emailed you the object lesson. You need to have an apple and a banana for that object lesson. I've already bought those. You don't need to buy them. But I do need you to read through that object lesson and let me know if you got any questions. And we're really looking forward to it. So it's like a one-minute phone call. I would say a phone call or a text. You know, some people like texting better than phone calls, and those are shorter. But you got to make sure you get the text back. That's the value of the phone call. Is the phone call, you know, there's communication.
Right. You know, they've heard you. Uh-huh.
Right. Yeah. So it's just kind of, you know, if you just do the discipline of, you know, build it in your time, whatever it is. Every Thursday, I'm going to call everybody that's on the schedule for Sunday, and just talk to them about what's going on. I promise you that eliminates 90% of your no-shows and your late people. And so it's just kind of just simple communication stuff like that is what makes things go a lot smoother.
Wow. That's good stuff. Well, man, there's so much more we could talk about, but I want people to read the book themselves. I mean, you've got some fantastic chapters. Do you have a favorite chapter? I'm just curious.
I think my favorite is chapter 14.
I'm not going to tell you
what it's about, though. You got to buy the book. But if you make sure you read chapter 14.
Yes. Go get it.
It's my favorite.
So Mark, tell folks how they can touch base with you. If they want to contact you, especially after they get the book and they have some questions or things, what's a good way to connect up with you?
Well, I'm on Facebook at least once a day, so that's a good way. They can contact me by email, which is my email is mark.harper@superchurch.com. I'll do my best to answer any questions.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thanks, brother, for being on the KMC podcast. I sure appreciate your heart. You've written some really good thoughts here. And so I hope that lots of people will get the Red Book as it comes out and as it launches. And I'm sure it will be a great encouragement to them. And of course, you know, you can post questions on the Kid Ministry Collective Facebook page. We will love to interact with you there if you have questions or want to dialogue there. So thanks again for folks for listening to this episode of the KMC. And we'll look forward to our next episode. We got some great ones coming up here in the future.
You've been listening to the Kid Ministry Collective podcast. We hope you've been informed, encouraged, and entertained for these few moments. We'd love for you to connect with us on our Kid Ministry Collective Facebook group or subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. It'd also mean a lot if you'd leave a review so we can help others learn about this podcast. If you want, you can watch this episode on video on our Kids Ministry Collective YouTube page. Our goal of the KMC is from Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Join us again soon for another KMC podcast.